Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week we feature an interview with Frank Lobiondo, who represents Atlantic City in New Jersey's District 2 in the U.S. House of Representatives. Lobiondo was first elected to Congress in 1994. A resident and businessman in Vineland, New Jersey, Lobiondo represented the first legislative district in the New Jersey State Assembly from 88 to 94. He has been a tireless champion for the gaming industry and Atlantic City during his time in Congress. His ability to work with politicians from both parties on issues crucial to his district and the industry has been one of his hallmarks. He spoke with me at his offices in Washington, D.C. in early February. Frank Lobiondo, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's great to see you, and thanks for the time here on Capitol Hill.
Sure, Roger. It's always good to be with you.
I want to start by talking about the Gaming Caucus you had a role in setting up several years ago, about 10 years ago.
1995.
Right? That's right. Well, even more than 10 years ago.
I found myself as a freshman-elect, congressman-elect, with about 70-some of others with me, and in that group was a congressman-elect by the name of John Ensign.
Uh-huh.
What was interesting, as they had us in orientation, we were doing a lot together, and without even knowing much about John or where he was from, we had a very good chemistry and sort of started spending some time with each other. Very quickly realized we each represented a similar interest,
mm-hmm.
Talked about how we could improve on what we would be able to do to represent our interest, our constituents, our districts, and came up with the Gaming Caucus, and we were co-chairs, and it ended up being something I think that has been very productive for the people that we represent and has been a good way to bring other members of Congress together.
Mm-hmm. And it is bipartisan, too.
It is bipartisan, and it always has been, and I hope that it always will be. Shelley Berkeley has taken the lead this year. She's been involved with us since she was elected to Congress. We've had various folks who have been involved and taken lead positions, but it is focusing on what we can do for our constituents in the gaming industry.
Mm-hmm. You all work together when the big federal issues come up, right?
We have a sort of a network system, so we're all on the lookout for issues that are sort of global with gaming.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't get involved with a specific issue of a specific casino
right,
in a specific
right, sure.
jurisdiction. So the two biggest things are to make sure that the federal government does not get involved with federal regulation or federal taxation.
Mm-hmm.
We think that both Nevada and New Jersey are great examples of how a state can get it right. And the feds don't have a good track record with a lot of areas. We don't want them involved in this because we do know that the anti-gamers would use that as a sort of just a way to get involved with ultimately hoping to figure out a way to get rid of gaming altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd come up with an idea to put a 50% tax on it or something
mm-hmm.
and really look to kill it.
Right,
so
right.
they're the two big issues. We had an issue a few years ago with the IRS that was sort of global in nature. John Ensign was still on the Ways and Means Committee in the House of Representatives at that time, but that ended up being something that we banded together. We meet on a sort of an irregular basis, but are always in contact mm-hmm. with each other, member to member, in between votes, and as issues arising, we can activate ourselves pretty quickly mm-hmm. if something should come out of the blue at us.
Okay. During the Clinton administration, there was talk of the federal excise tax, as you mentioned. Now that the Democrats are controlling Congress, has that idea been bandied about in any way, shape, or form?
No, it really hasn't been. As a matter of fact, I think that Mr. Clinton put himself out on a limb at that time. And, of course, the Gaming Caucus strongly reacted. AGA got involved at the time. We developed an action plan, made sure that we had folks who were going to take point positions on this. And I believe that at this point in time, that Chairman of Ways and Means and Chairman of Judiciary Committee are not on board with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I would be shocked. I've been told that Chairman Connors and Chairman Rangel understand that this is a bad idea,
mm-hmm.
and if anything is brewing with it, it's way below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chairman Rangel has the casino industry in his district as well.
Yes, he does.
So I think he probably understands that just as well as you do. Another federal issue is the Indian gaming issue. We're at the 20th anniversary of the IGRA bill this year, and there's been sporadic attempts to revisit that bill. Have you heard of anything coming up, and would you favor revisiting that to any extent?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard of anything coming up with it. I mean, it doesn't appear to be on any even a long list of what's coming into the future. Certainly, anything that comes up involving gaming, we'll put it under the microscope, take a close look, but haven't paid much attention to it right now.
One of the other issues involved in Indian gaming is the off-reservation issue, where they claim land as part of their reservation and build a casino where it's more commercially viable than their own historic reservation, or even for those tribes that don't have a reservation want to do that. There was a recent decision by the BIA that really kind of knocked that out of the box for half a dozen tribes or more. Would you favor controlling that to a greater extent at the federal level?
I think we should, absolutely. We had a similar situation a few years ago in my district where a tribe was trying to somehow develop an affiliation with Wildwood, and with the attempt to establish a casino with the idea of claiming tribal sovereignty and circumventing the Casino Control Commission and the Division of Gaming Enforcement. I think that's a terrible idea. If the tribes want to get involved into the gaming industry, as far as I'm concerned, say in New Jersey, where they're going to do as you suggested, find a piece of land and it's not directly connected, then it's got to be the way anyone else would come into it. So they've got to go before the Casino Control Commission, subject themselves completely to the Division of Gaming Enforcement, and have the exact same set of rules that everyone else is playing by.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about some of the local tribes, or supposed tribes in New Jersey. They haven't been recognized by anybody, including the state, and they've been lobbying for quite some time. I think the Lenape tribe, and certainly there's a tribe up in North Jersey that claims official status in the state. Where are you in terms of getting federal recognition for those groups?
Well, I really, I've certainly not been involved, and again, my concern is that the economic engine that the casinos have been for the state of New Jersey and certainly for my district means so very, very much that if there's to be competition, well, I think that the industry welcomes it and I would welcome it, but only if the playing field is level. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the intentions are. I haven't seen anybody that's come to me and detailed any plans, but to establish tribal sovereignty with the idea of working under their own rules and regulations and aside from the state of New Jersey, I would not support in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And nonetheless, even if they do go forward with that, it's a tremendously long process.
It's a long process.
Yeah, absolutely.
As it should be.
It's another global gaming issue, I think, that the Congress has been looking at, which is internet gaming. Been several bills out there, allowing certain kinds of internet gaming and not others. It's and the UIGA bill that passed, in the dark of the night a couple of years ago, also had some carve outs for other online betting options, which again then caused problems with the trade organization, World Trade Organization. There's a bill out there now, and I believe you're a co-sponsor of it, for to set up a federal study panel. Is
Congressman
that true?
Porter's bill.
Yes.
I think that is the way to go. I believe that the bill that Congressman Franks has out of the Financial Services Committee is very well intended, but I think presents big problems. And if, in fact, we are to move forward, we really need to do it right, and the current situation is not right. The bill that I'm a co-sponsor of would set up a study commission so that we could, with today's state-of-the-art technology, intelligently and accurately determine what is the best course of action to take. While I think the properties, the gaming companies, have been rather low-key on Chairman Franks's bill, I think it's pretty clear that at least my fear is that this could be the front edge of a federal agency to get themselves involved with casino gaming, which some people want to see lead to federal regulation and federal taxation, because if you have the feds create their own agency to regulate internet gaming, then, you know, we're just going to pass a bill saying that this is what they're going to do and leave them to their own devices. I don't think so, not from my vantage point.
Yeah, yeah. I think Congressman Wexler has a bill that exempts skill games, most specifically poker, from online gaming bans. Would you support something like that?
Well, I haven't. I really haven't read his bill completely, but I think if we're going to do this, we should be comprehensive. Poker may be in a different category. I'd really have to read that bill thoroughly and see the fine print on it.
But nonetheless, you want to see a federal study that can really get to the bottom of what it is and whether it can be regulated both technically and
maybe the financially. Maybe the federal study says that poker's a good way to go. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should exempt poker and not exempt others, mm-hmm. and you know that we have it out there so that it has. Experts from the real world, mm-hmm. not bureaucrats from Washington, making a determination and suggestions on how we can do this and do it right.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that it's almost unstoppable, that it's out there, people are playing, and as long as they're doing that, you know, the government should be involved in controlling it and taxing it?
I don't believe the government should be involved in taxing it. Mm-hmm. I've got a great fear for how they're going to end up doing it. It's certainly out there.
Yeah.
We know with the offshore properties, in fact, with the lawsuit that's ongoing with the World Trade Organization involved in it. So we can't deny and say that it's not there. But how do we bring it together so that we can do it intelligently and have it work? I know we had a presentation by the Brits on what they're doing, and I think it's a big revenue generator for them. They were pretty high on it, but the presentation that was given didn't give the counterpoint.
Right.
And that's what I'm interested in. And once again, there are people here who get sweaty palms over thinking about, you know, taxing gaming because it's been successful in a lot of jurisdictions because of the economic stimulus that it provides and the jobs that it provides. So before we suggest that the feds are going to be involved with the regulation and control of this, we have to have the impact from the states, and we have to understand that the model that we've been using with the states being in control has really worked extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
And in many areas, I think, where we're seeing excessive taxation and or regulation, once again, it is just an attempt to be able to get to the beginning of outlawing gaming.
Okay. So you would almost prefer that this be a state's rights thing if it even does go through?
That's my first preference.
Okay, great. You're up for election this year, and rumor has it that the Democrats have targeted you as one of the vulnerable seats in New Jersey. Do you believe that the Democrats are wielding more power now in your district, and what's your outlook on the upcoming race?
Well, I have officially been targeted by the DCCC, Democrat mm-hmm. Campaign Congressional Committee, mm-hmm. Actually at the end of last January. They've sort of ebbed and flowed with intensity of print activity, so mm-hmm. to speak, with various people making various statements about what's going on. It is pretty clear that New Jersey is a much bluer state mm-hmm. than it was just a few years back. I think that whether it's the Democrats in Washington or Democrats in New Jersey, they're looking at what the recent trends have been. They look to some legislative races that have gone from Republicans to Democrats. And I think that's basically what they're sort of angling at, as far as I'm concerned. I take every race very seriously. I'm preparing this time for a full-blown attack, if you will, because I think that's their method of operation. I also work very hard at doing the best to represent my constituents. So I don't think it's a situation with me where people haven't heard from me or seen me in 2 years, and all of a sudden, 3 months before the election, Lo Biondo shows up and says, right. Hey, you know, how about voting for me? I continue to remain very active in the district. Very active with the properties. Rarely a weekend goes by that I'm not at multiple properties from one reason or another. Very bullish on Atlantic City, what they've been able to do for the state of New Jersey. And also blended that in with a host of other things that are involving tourism, which is an economic generator, not just for the casinos, mm-hmm. but for the entire state of New Jersey, but especially the shore areas that I represent, and to pay attention to the other issues that are important to the people that I represent. So being a strong advocate for the environment, being a strong advocate for healthcare, for education, and for a whole host of other things that I think people can relate to in the real world. Things happen in Washington, and sometimes it's very complicated, and the wording is difficult. But back home, people get it if you can easily explain to them what you're doing and why. And I felt it's been a great honor to represent the district, and America is a great place. Mm-hmm. So I welcome the opportunity to talk about what I've done and where I'd like to go from here.
Okay. One of the issues that for some reason keeps coming up in the Atlantic City area is the sports betting issue. And, you know, we thought this was put to rest in the early 90s when the local officials, when the state officials wouldn't give the residents of New Jersey the ability to vote on it, and the window of opportunity that New Jersey had closed. Do you see any hope that would we can revive that issue and get New Jersey a second bite at the apple, so to speak?
Well, I'm very pleased. First of all, I've been a strong supporter of sports betting. I think it's a component that makes all the sense in the world. A little bit like internet gaming, we know that there is sports betting that's mm-hmm. going on. We know it's not being done legally, mm-hmm. and we know that this can cause big problems. So I think the way that Nevada and the other jurisdictions that have it are doing it has proven that it's very viable, brings it online, and it is another tool in what the casinos can use to be able to continue with their economic stimulus they're providing and the jobs. I was disappointed when New Jersey did not have the ability to vote in the early 90s on this, but was very pleased when it appears that the state of New Jersey, through legislative action, is proceeding. Now, they have a rather unique point of view mm-hmm. that the federal laws are unconstitutional for interstate commerce reasons, and that the state of New Jersey, if in fact they pass and enact this, can challenge the feds in court, and I welcome that. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see us be victorious. I think it would be a great win for New Jersey and for Atlantic City, and it looks like the Assembly will get a chance to vote on this. A little bit unclear what the Senate's going to do. I mm-hmm. think there's some conflicts there that maybe haven't been resolved. But I'd love to see it on November's ballot.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the federal government's reaction to that would be? Obviously, they're going to defend the Congress's action of many years ago.
I'm sure they will defend it. I would be surprised if they did not. A lot of pretty smart lawyers in New Jersey are saying they mm-hmm. feel that this is something they can make a run at. And that's why we have the courts, and that's why we challenge things.
And given the fact that there were grandfather clauses for at least four other states, including Delaware, right next door, you know, we're going to be facing that kind of competition head on.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Atlantic City's on its third mayor in less than a year. An election in November could even bring a fourth mayor, which kind of is ridiculous. But do you favor like any kind of state control over Atlantic City? It's so uncertain what's going on in the city at this point. Who's in control? You know, even you know, the city may be controlled by someone who's currently in jail. We don't know.
Well, it's a huge concern, and it's. It's been a black eye for Atlantic City. It's been a black eye for New Jersey. I've had to bite my lip on many occasions with the jokes from my colleagues about what's going on. I hope that Atlantic City can understand how fragile the confidence that people have placed in them could be if the wrong things happen. If New Jersey were a state where they were running a surplus, where the government was running extremely well, where people were coming to the state instead of flocking away from the state, you know, then maybe it would make some sense to suggest that we should look at New Jersey taking over Atlantic City. As bad as Atlantic City is, to imagine that the state of New Jersey would take it over and do to Atlantic City what they've done to the rest of the state is a horrifying thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not support that in any way, shape, or form at this point. I think that we've got to find a way to have the people in Atlantic County and Atlantic City understand, especially with development that's on the horizon and the great opportunities we have, that will get this cleaned up. Mayor Evans is the most recent mayor. I've known Scott for quite a while. I've talked with him on a few different occasions, including as recently as Sunday. I think that, and I'm hopeful that he'll be a clear break from those problems of the past that we've had. He's still getting sort of his feet on the ground and letting the dust settle, but he has a great opportunity to bring people together, and I'm hopeful that that's what happens. We sort of have run out of second chances here.
Okay. Is that... You're used to that, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. We can edit that out. Governor Corzine has proposed a huge revenue raiser in boosting the tolls in New Jersey. Obviously, there's a huge budget deficit there. Are you in favor of his proposal to do that, or would you favor some other way to close that budget deficit?
I think that the plan that the governor is recommending is very, very problematic. I know the governor's statement is, well, you know, give me the solution to this. But to borrow 30-some billion dollars and have a $110 or $20 billion payback to run it over 75 years, not give the voters a chance to say something about it, I think is wrong. Mm. And we are not having an opportunity to fully understand the impact that this is going to have. It could be a great impact on Atlantic City because not that many people are flying into Atlantic City. And while someone may not hesitate to spend X number of dollars on a dinner or a show and maybe some entertainment, if they think they've got a $50 price tag in tolls to get there on top of the price of gasoline, this could very well drive people away with jurisdictions close by like we now have in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania. So, you know, I understand the governor's got a serious problem, but there's got to be a better way to deal with this. If I were in the state legislature, I'd probably be able to give you what my opinion is of the other opportunity. But a lot of people are going to be looking at this, and I think this is a wrong direction to go in. I know the industry is supporting it. The group in Atlantic City of casinos and the chamber is supporting it, and I'm certainly not going to second guess why they're doing it. But from my vantage point of just observing and reading what I've seen up to this point, I think there's some very serious cautionary flags out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. And there doesn't seem to be any corresponding cut in spending.
And as a matter of fact, not only is there not a corresponding cut in spending, but if you look carefully at what's going on, they're increasing spending. Mm-hmm. They're finding ways to suggest that they should spend in a wide variety of categories that are all very good sounding, but we are in deep trouble. Mm-hmm. Now, the other problem with this, and I'm afraid that the casinos are going to be held hostage, is that 2 years ago, because of an internal party battle between factions of the Democrats, at the worst possible time on 4th of July weekend, we had a shutdown of our casinos for a week. What a terrible message to send to people who are thinking of investing not hundreds of millions, but billions of dollars, that we are that unstable that we would think about shutting down the industry again and letting it be a pawn with an internal food fight for political reasons within the Democratic Party. So as we look to where we're going with this, I believe, and it's been demonstrated before, that the governor or someone in the administration is going to suggest to the industry, and I don't know this, it's just my guess, that if you don't support this, you're going to be looking at another shutdown. You're going to be looking at some other extortionary tactic by the state of New Jersey. So this is bad medicine, but the other medicine will be much more bitter than this is.
Yeah.
It's not a good situation, and Atlantic City has been held hostage time and time again. They're paying ransom money to the racetrack industry. If the casinos have to do it on their own, why don't the racetracks have to do it on their own? And if it's $80 million this year, what's going to stop it from being $300 million next year? And if they're so short-sighted to not believe that Atlantic City is a huge part of the economic engine for New Jersey, let them fool around with a little bit more and see when the operators lose confidence what possibly could happen. Tens of thousands of jobs, incredible ripple effect through the whole tourism industry in South Jersey and New Jersey, and I think they're being very short-sighted how they're looking at this.
Mm-hmm. No question. Well, you mentioned the racing industry. They paid $80 million over the last 3 years, and I think now they're looking for somewhere around $100 million for the next 3 years. Where does it end? Why should the casinos have to prop up an industry that you know, unfortunately, is dying through no fault of the casinos because they're not offering a product that the public wants?
Well, it's just as I've commented. I think it's terribly wrong. It's almost like somebody on the street coming up to you and saying, you know, I know where you live. I know where your kids are. You know, I have a gun and, you know, you're either going to pay me $1,000 or something bad's going to happen. I mean, you know, so if Atlantic City says they're not going to pay this money, then we know they've been threatened with VLTs and who knows what else. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very bad policy, and if these racetracks are so important, why aren't people supporting them? So as I mentioned, in our society, if you do well, you succeed, and if you don't, you shouldn't have the casinos have to pay for the faults of the racing industry and their inability to run a profitable business. Mm-hmm. And I am fearful that the next go-around, as I mentioned, will not be $80 million. It'll be something by a factor of $80 million. And, you know, the time after that, and it gets to the point where the casinos have to say no, and then they're going to do bad things to them anyhow. They're just, you know, if you, you keep feeding the alligator, so to speak, and, you know, you run out of food, at some point the alligator's going to eat you. And this is what I'm fearful as Trenton is doing. They don't seem to have an understanding of how to get their fiscal house under control. Many of the states around us are running surpluses. New Jersey, I think, by depending on who you listen to, is $3 or $4 billion in the red. June is coming up on us pretty quickly, and in this fabulous plan we're doing, we're going to implement it and then have it effective. Excuse me, when? 2010. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're in trouble yesterday.
Right.
So I have some serious concerns with what appears to be the direction they're going.
But nonetheless, with you know, some of these bad things that are happening at state level, the city seems to be humming along fine. I mean, certainly there was a downturn in the revenue from last year. Do you attribute that more to competition from other states or to the kind of souring economy right now?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. We had about, I guess, an 8% downturn in revenue, which could have been much worse than mm-hmm. what it is. I believe that part of it is due to disposable income mm-hmm. and the economy. I think part of it is due to the casinos in the Philadelphia area, which are at a startup stage and are new and people are looking at. And I'd like to know if factored in is the close of the Sands mm-hmm. and the revenue that they would have had they been open. Mm-hmm. So I think if you look at those couple of things, that there are some explanations here. And it is really exciting to see what's going on. I had an opportunity a few months back to be at the implosion party mm-hmm. for the Sands with Pinnacle Gaming and Dan Lee and Kim Townsend, who are really have people excited about mm-hmm. the property that's coming up there. It's an incredible location right on the boardwalk. I was in an event on the boardwalk on Sunday, and it had been about at the North End. It had been a couple of months since I had been down there, and I was just thrilled to see the site work that Rebel Gaming has got going with the pilings that are being, I mean, the cranes that are up there.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And if you look at the three properties that are announced, and between Pinnacle and Rebel and MGM, we're talking about $10 billion. Mm-hmm. In fact, Fox News did a piece on it about a week ago. I happened to be listening in the car about how incredible that it is that there would be confidence to invest $10 billion when the economy, for many others, has big question marks mm-hmm. next to it. I think that the companies that are doing the investing are such solid professional people that it should send a pretty strong message. They've done their homework. They believe that bringing gaming to the next level in Atlantic City has huge potential, looking at the number of people that are within a 300-mile radius of us and who have not really been to Atlantic City or mm-hmm. been that often.
Right.
So I think this is nothing but good news. There's a lot of excitement on the ground. There's a lot of energy with people who are looking to the future and how that will all come together. And I share in their optimism and enthusiasm.
I just have one last question concerning that. There's been a lot of talk about the development of Bader Field lately. CRDA is pushing to get the bids out within the next 3 months, Tom Carver told me. Is this putting the cart before the horse in your view, or do you think we need to press the good luck that we're going through right now with all the other development?
Well, let me answer your question by first saying that I've known Tom Carver for a number of years, probably more than 20 years. I think he's an incredibly talented individual that brings a lot to the table. But on the Bader Field issue, this is an incredible opportunity that comes around like once every 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. There probably isn't another property like this certainly not the country, maybe the world. Yeah. The opportunity to do this right and have this complement the rest of the development in Atlantic City to make us a destination that no one ever thought possible is very real. Mm-hmm. I think they need to take a deep breath. I think they need to understand what they're looking for to do this and not rush into it. There could be a tremendous windfall for Atlantic City, for hopefully property tax reduction and some other things to move the city forward. But more importantly, this would put Atlantic City on the map beyond what anyone ever imagined if it's done right. Mm-hmm. So to be rushing into it, if that's the case, I throw up some yellow flags and say, folks, look at this opportunity. Let us do something that may take a little bit longer up front, that a few years after development, we're gonna sit back and we're going to say, wow, this is something that the whole world is taking a look at.
No question. Well, Congressman Fike Lobiondo, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Wonderful comments, very insightful, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay.
And good luck in the election.
Yep, thanks, Roger. Great to be with you.
Thank you for choosing the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn about any of the issues discussed on this show, go to our website at ggbmagazine.com or subscribe to the industry's most comprehensive newsletter, Global Gaming Business Weekly. We'll see you next week for another edition of the Global Gaming Business Podcast.